Good evening and welcome to Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. I'm Alex Hernandez of Noticias Univision Chicago, which airs every weekday morning at 5 and 6. Joanna Hernandez has the evening off. On the show tonight, Mexico has elected its first ever woman president. How some Chicagoans helped make that possible. How a Chicago Tree Keepers program is connecting Spanish-speaking residents to nature in their communities.
It's a lot of history in the photos, a lot of love.
And a new photo exhibition captures a past life in Pilsen. We meet the photographer as he returns to Chicago. And we're back to kick things off right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Mexico is reeling from its historic presidential election.
Viva el presidente López Obrador! Viva Mexico! Viva Mexico!
Claudia Sheinbaum has been elected as the country's first woman and Jewish president. And it was the first time Mexican nationals abroad got the opportunity to cast in-person ballots. Chicago's Mexican community showed up in the thousands at the Mexican consulate to vote. But not everyone got the opportunity to do so. Joining us now with more are Lilia Fernandez, a professor of history at University of Illinois Chicago. She's also the author of Brown in the Windy City, Mexicans and Puerto Ricans in Post-War Chicago. Immigrants' rights activist Jorge Mujica. And Jesus Perez, a case manager at Casa Michoacán. We did reach out to the Mexican consulate for a comment, but did not hear back in time for this show. But I want to welcome all. Thank you for joining us today. Jorge, I see you're wearing the party's color.
Uniform,
so I'm not going to ask you who you voted for. I think that's very clear. But ladies first, gentlemen. We're going to start with you, Lilia. The election, as we all know, is very historic. Like we mentioned, Claudia Sheinbaum is the first woman and Jewish president in the Mexican history. Can you talk about the significance of having a president with both of these identities in a Catholic majority country?
It is absolutely a remarkable accomplishment and historical development. And I think it's important for people to remember that Sheinbaum becomes, I believe, the 12th woman president in all of Latin America, a region that the United States tends to think is less politically progressive, less advanced in terms of gender equity and issues of that nature. And the fact that Mexico has elected a female president before we have here in the United States is very telling.
That was going to be my next question to you as well. What's the message that this sends that Mexico saw their first woman and Jewish president before the U.S.?
Yes, on both counts, right. Mexico has surpassed the U.S., I think it forces us to reconsider, you know, how we think of ourselves as Americans as being, again, much more advanced, much more developed and sophisticated politically compared to our neighbors to the south. Right. And it should force us to reconsider also the democratic possibilities in Mexico and, you know, what we might expect going forward.
Well, we were very close here in the United States also.
Yes.
In Mexico, in that regard, we're very close. Jorge, same question to you. What do you think is the message that Mexico is sending, you know, having elected their first woman and Jewish president?
Well, it's an incredible victory for Mexican women. They started voting 60 years ago. I mean, women were not allowed to vote in Mexican elections until the late 50s, 1958, if I'm not wrong, or 1964. So in 60 years, becoming from non-voting to electing a president is an incredible triumph. Now, the other element that is there is the participation of the left in Mexican politics. Since 1979, first the Communist Party, then the Unified Socialist Party, then the Socialist Mexican Party, started participating, winning governors, winning senators, mm-hmm. winning congressmen. And this is just the latest consequence of all that.
Right.
You know, Claudia Sheinbaum is a leftist, has been a leftist since I met her.
Like the actual president?
And, the actual
and
president.
Jorge, yeah. You were one of the thousands, right, on that Sunday, ready to vote.
Many times. In
the Mexican, in Chicago's Mexican consulate. But you didn't actually get to vote. What happened?
What happened is that the National Elections Institute didn't think that so many Mexicans were going to vote. Logistically, there were 1,500 pre-registered Mexicans to vote at the consulate in person and 1,500 extra ballots. Mm-hmm. And the calculation by the Election Institute is that each voter was going to take 62 seconds to vote. Reality was that they were taking between 5 and 10 minutes.
Okay.
So you can imagine right. by the middle of the day. You know,
Were you expecting so many people? What time did you get to the Mexican consulate?
7:50 a.m.
How many people were there?
At least 1,600.
Already?
Because the line was all around the block surrounding the Mexican consulate. So think about 400 people mm-hmm. per block.
Right.
So 1,600 at least.
Right. Well, I don't think Claudia missed your vote. I think she
oh,
made
no,
it okay.
Oh, no, she knows.
She made it okay. Jesus, you did actually get to vote, right?
Yeah, I was lucky to get in uh-huh. at the last minute. It was like 20 minutes to get in.
How was your process? How long were you in line for?
I was there from 7:30 in the morning to like probably like 7. They were telling us that we're not going to be able to vote, that okay. our voices wouldn't count this time. Mexico.
Were they giving you other options? Like was it already too late to vote online? Because you had to pre-register yeah. for that
so
too.
So there were still three options. Mm-hmm. Vote postal, that they will send a ballot to your house. You will send it back before the elections. You could sign in to do online. And in the consulate, there were 20 locations, I believe 19, that were functioning. They didn't expect this amount of people outside of the consulate. That's
right.
the thing. We're not going to blame the INE, the Instituto Electoral Nacional. We're just trying to make it better. We can go to your
right. And this is something that not only happened here in Chicago, but it appears it happened.
Every Mexican consulate exactly. who opened for in-person voting, it was the same problem everywhere.
Right. Jesus, you actually voted for a different candidate, right? What was your reaction when the results were finalized?
Honestly, we were seeing this coming. Mm-hmm. We were not expecting to win. We just didn't want to give all the power to one person, because giving the power to one person is making a mistake. And that happened before with the political parties that were in the mandate in Mexico.
Right. Going back with you, Claudia. Lily, I'm sorry. Claudia. Right now, she's very busy. She's very busy at the moment. Lilia, voting, we can describe it as chaotic, pretty much, and disorganized. Why do you think the Mexican consulate was seemingly unprepared for the volume of people?
You know, I think we underestimate mm-hmm. how much Mexican immigrants and Mexican Americans more generally are interested in the electoral process. Mm-hmm. And so they were very unprepared in that regard. I mean, if we look at voting here in our elections in the U.S., only 11% of all Latinos in the Chicago area over the age of 18 voted in our last mayoral election.
Okay.
So, and Mexicans, of course, are the majority of Latinos in the area, right? With such low voter turnout, I think we can safely say that this is a population that is largely very disenfranchised, not able to express their opinions in local elections, in federal elections, if they're not U.S. citizens, if they have green cards or if they're undocumented or have some other status. And so the fact that so many thousands of people turned out mm-hmm. at the Mexican consular right. offices to cast their ballot tells us that people are interested, they're right. invested, they want to participate in the process.
Definitely. How do you think this translates to the elections here in the U.S. this November?
Well, I hope that it's an indication that more people will register to vote and actually, you know, cast their ballots on election day.
Right.
I think that too many have taken Latino voters for granted for too long. And the fact that we witnessed this historic participation of Mexicans abroad, outside of Mexico, and that the electorate has voted in the first female and Jewish president in Mexico is, again, really remarkable and historically significant.
Definitely. Jorge, you waited for so long. What motivated you to keep waiting, stay in line, and to go vote? And for Claudia,
I promoted
especially.
The vote from abroad. Mm-hmm. I have been fighting for this for 35 years, so I had to be there, definitely. And we collaborated with the Election Institute to register voters, to make certain that everybody knew election day, because the candidate of the opposition was calling people to vote on July 2nd, you know, for instance. But we participated very heavily in making this a big election.
Really. Right. So. What about Claudia that inspires you?
Claudia, as I was saying before, she's been an activist forever. I met her when she was probably 21 or 22, something like that. She's always been in politics, but she's also a scientist. She's an environmental scientist, part of a group that won a Nobel Prize. And she's a fantastic person in all concerns, you know, an intellectual. And I'm pretty sure she's going to govern Mexico in an incredibly democratic way. But she's going to make inroads in making sure that Mexico benefits the majority of Mexicans. For 80 years, we had a supermajority of one political party or two political parties, and now the opposition is complaining that we do have majority. So, you know.
And from a very young party, I might add.
From a very young party, yes.
Jesus, what's your take? What do you expect from this new government?
Honestly, I'm really proud to have the first woman as a president. Moving forward, we just want the best for Mexico. We have a couple points. We want better consulates, better services, actually, because to make an appointment to get your passport or matricula, it takes about 2 weeks. And then there's like few employees, probably like 10 doing that. So it takes like an hour or 2 hours to get your passport. Mm-hmm. We want programs that are for kids at the U.S. for education, ESL classes, or I don't know if I can read them.
We are very short on time because we wanted to take your take on what you expect from this government. And I want to thank all of you actually for joining us today. Unfortunately, our time is very short, but thank you for your insight. I'm sorry you had to wait so long in line. But you
no
made
problem.
It here.
We're happy.
That's a good thing. Thank you so much. And we're going to be back with more Chicago Tonight Latino Voices right after this. Don't go anywhere. Listen to this. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Chicago's tree canopy is in decline. The city ranks far below the national average with a disparity of trees on Chicago's west and south sides. But the local conservation group, Openlands, has been working to reverse these narratives through its Tree Keeper certification course, which is now being offered in Spanish. Joining us now with more about this effort are Donatiu Rodriguez, the community arborist at Openlands, who is running the group's Spanish Tree Keepers program, and Pablo Rodriguez, a certified tree keeper with Openlands. I want to welcome both of you. Thank you for joining us today. And this is a very interesting program for people who are familiar with it. Donatiu, The Tree Keeper program actually was launched more than 30 years ago. People might not know this. In 1991, what is a Tree Keeper actually?
A Tree Keeper is going to be OpenLand's trained volunteers. It's a very intensive course. It's about a month long, eight classes, hour long class. And so they learn all about tree biology, tree identification, how to plant trees, how to prune trees, how to advocate for trees. Everything tree related is something that we train them in. And then once they're done with the training program, they're then able to come out and volunteer for us for different events that we do, like pruning, planting, tree inventory, things like that.
So pretty much anyone that's interested could do this, could learn how to do this, pretty much.
Yeah, there's pretty much almost no restrictions. Mm-hmm. Essentially, anybody from somebody in high school all the way to somebody who's retired, and actually a lot of our tree keepers are folks that are retired and are always had an interest in the environment, and now they have the free time to dedicate to it.
Right. Pablo, you're one of these persons, right? You were interested and you got certified. You're tree keeper number 1905, as I have here in my notes, to be exact.
Yeah.
What has been your experience like, and what do you do as a tree keeper exactly?
Yeah, so like Donati was saying, we have four main things that we do. We do tree planting, so we go out around the communities, plant some trees in areas that don't have as much. We have pruning, so normally during the summertime is when tree planting happens. During the winter, it's pruning. So more in the wintertime, we have pruning events going around the city, making sure that the trees, especially in parks, are getting taken care of. And then lastly, we also have tree walks and like tree inventory. So you go around the community, learn what tree species are in your local area, but also tree inventory. So in order to be able to kind of cut these trees, you have to go and see what trees need help. And so those are some of the events. And also right now, I stepped up as a chapter leader. So with that, you have a little bit more liberty. So my chapter, we have a book club. So we go out and read books that have to do with trees. So you have a lot of liberty also with OpenLands to kind of do, if there's a certain niche or event that you want to do, you could do that.
What inspired you, Pablo, to do this? Why are you doing it?
Yeah, so for me, it actually started with a tree tour that I did in Lincoln Park Zoo. So I live in Edgewater. And so it was Arbor Day. I was kind of excited to do something to go out there and be in nature. And so I learned about that tree tour, learned about what an arborist was. So I was like, oh my God, you get paid to take care of trees. Let me learn more about it. So I did a Google search about tree programs in Chicago. Luckily, OpenLands is an amazing organization doing a lot of work around that. So I like send them an email, learn about their tree keeping program, and got involved.
Do you see yourself doing this for years to come?
Yes, actually, I'm really interested in becoming an arborist eventually. So OpenLand has an arborist program. So I haven't done it yet, so I'm interested in eventually doing it myself.
Wow, interesting. I think you're going to get more people motivated on doing that. Donatiu, why are trees declining in Chicago, and what can be done to reverse that?
A major reason why we're losing trees in the city is back in 2012, we had the emerald ash borer come into the region. And so a lot of the trees in our canopy here in Chicago were ash trees. So we've lost a lot of those trees. Another reason, too, is we have a maturing canopy. So we have a lot of old trees. Trees are living things. So after a while, after a couple decades in the ground, especially in an urban environment, they tend to decline and no longer be alive. And so we're not keeping up with the losses that we're experiencing, and that's something that OpenLands is trying to address with its Tree Planters Grant program.
As we all know, right, trees are a source of oxygen, but what other health benefits do trees bring us?
Oh, they have so many benefits. So we have, like you mentioned, oxygen. They have societal benefits, so tree-lined streets. People drive a lot slower there. They have cooling effects, so you have trees providing shade, lower your electricity costs. So if you have your air conditioner in the shade, it's not going to be working as hard. Students that have access to trees on their school campuses tend to perform better, tend to have less behavioral issues. They tend to graduate with higher grades.
Speaking about the program specifically, why is it so important to expand the program to Spanish speakers?
One of the major reasons is that the Latino community, we have a close association with nature. One of the first things that we do in the class is we ask everybody to share, what is your tree story? And so it's just interesting to see the subtle differences between the two classes. So in the English class, it tends to be more like, oh, the tree that was in my backyard, I was playing there. Whereas with the Spanish street keepers, Pablo, if you remember, a lot of people were talking about, like, yeah, I grew up in Latin America. These trees were providing food for me. I was playing in them. And so it provided such a vital role. So there's this misconception that the Latino community doesn't appreciate the environment, but it's just that nobody has asked us about it in our language.
Interesting. Pablo, you actually planted the 1,000th tree in April? 10,000 yes. tree in April at Arbor Day. What other techniques have you learned?
Yeah, so there's different ways. So the biggest one is pruning. That's a lot of people are kind of scared of that because you're going in, cutting some branches off. And so it's really kind of hands-on, but a lot of people see it as a scary thing because they think they're going to hurt the tree, but it's actually an amazing thing to support it. When there's like five reasons to cut it. The biggest one is training. You want to train the tree to grow a proper way so it's beneficial to the community. So that's a huge one. Another one is just to know how to advocate for trees, right. Learning how to talk to your alderman, to your neighbor of, there's this tree that's not getting taken care of. What can we do to support it?
Definitely.
If you don't have trees.
Guys, we're very short on time.
Sorry.
Last question, 15 seconds. Yeah. Just real quick, what can we do as a community to take care of trees? Real quick.
Talk to your neighbors. Talk to your neighbors about trees. Everybody has some feeling about trees.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys. Visiting the past life in Pilsen through the lens of a camera. Stay with us. We'll be right back. A new photo collection at the Harold Washington Library is giving a glimpse into what life was like for Latinos in Chicago during the 1990s. At that time, Japanese photographer Akito Tsuda was a student at Columbia College when a class assignment brought him to the Pilsen neighborhood. After graduating, he left the United States, taking those photos with him. But years later, he took a chance and reconnected with his subjects. Now, he's back in the city, revisiting the people and places he visited all those years ago.
So there's an image here that Akito shot where it's clearly raining a lot, and you can see the entrance of San Procopio Church, which is across the street. It's a very, probably one of the iconic.
It's a beautiful shot.
So Akito started posting his photos back in 2014, I think, and people started seeing their cousins, their parents, and so it sort of spread through social media.
I left United States in 1994. Couldn't say properly goodbye to the many people. I thought this is a chance that I can reconnect to show these people and show my appreciations. But I didn't expect too much because I have no contact between the people for the long years. So I was kind of afraid. The reaction.
It was perfect. So
a few years later, he was out here. He's brought out here by several groups. He did a show of his work. They laid out the photos, and people can come and do interviews, talk about any memories from the photos, or see if they knew anybody in the images too.
Now I can tell you from the bottom of my heart that your pictures have brought so much love. You captured pictures that a lot of people would not be able to have done it. Some people didn't have a camera. Some people might have not had money for film, or they just didn't think so. But the pictures that you captured are so much full of love because these are beautiful memories that we probably would have never seen.
New construction, so you can tell that no longer has the canopy, and then the next two homes right there. Then you got the alley, and then the huge corner building right there.
It's interesting to see how much the neighborhood has changed and hasn't changed. But definitely, you know, gentrification has changed the neighborhood a bit. But it's a lot of history in the photos, a lot of love. And it's just, I hope people can see all that and see that the love that Akito had for Chicago and the residents of Pilsen.
Like him, Mario said, he said to me, thank you for carefully watching the neighborhood. Thank you for carefully watching our life. How can I say? It's the biggest happiness I could ever have received.
All right, one, two, three, Akito! Let's go!
The exhibit is open through the end of the year. For more information, you can visit our website. That's going to be our show for tonight. Be sure to check our website, WTTW.com/news, for the very latest from WTTW News. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for Week in Review. Don't forget also to tune in to Noticias Univision Chicago every weekday morning at 5 and 6. I'll be waiting for you. We leave you tonight with music from Johnny Canales' show. Canales, a Mexican Tejano singer and TV host, was a beloved personality and helped introduce the world to superstar singer Selena. He died today in Corpus Christi, Texas. He was 77 years old. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight Latino Voices, I'm Alex Hernandez. Muy buenas noches. Una niña tiene hambre, un enfermo no tiene alcohol, un anciano duerme en la calle, un drogadicto nunca llegó. Una bomba es un desastre, un jubilado se suicidó, un ingeniero maneja un taxi, un delincuente la corrupción. Un ciego vive de su acordeón, un pastor se hace millonario, un millonario gobernador. Una raza perseguida, cuando combate el nombre de Dios, una guerra que no termina, alguien negocia revolución.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, which is proud to honor founder and senior partner Robert Clifford, who has been named in Forbes' 2024 list of America's top 200 lawyers.